from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago. Welcome back inside the clubhouse on 670 The Score and your free Odyssey app, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. I'm David Haugh, along with Bruce Levine, talking baseball again this Saturday, the way we do every week of the year, most every week of the year. Today, trying to piece together the perplexing Cubs pitching puzzle while wondering if the White Sox will ever score a run in St. Louis. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Good morning, David. Yeah, that's a good question. There are a lot of good questions about the Chicago teams not playing their best baseball right now. One team struggling to find some answers. The other struggling to tread water until they get their players back. I guess we should start with the Chicago Cubs.
Well, I think that is the biggest story in town. They are the team that is most relevant. We'll get to the White Sox later, and obviously they're making some moves. They're bringing up the number 4 prospect, Brian Ramos, reportedly. We'll get into what that means. But biggest story in town is the Brewers are in town. And the Brewers beat the Cubs 3-1 on Friday to begin this series, which is a big one. Even though it's early May, Bruce, it's Craig Counsell's old team against Craig Counsell's new team. And yesterday was a familiar story, unfortunately. Adbert Alzolay, the guy who came into the season after proving that he was a pretty good closer the second half of last year, doesn't have it and did it again, blowing the lead in the eighth inning. Bruce, I think that's where you feel, from a Cub fan perspective, boy, you start to wonder and worry, what are they going to do with Adbert Alzolay?
Well, I don't know if it's what you do with Adbert Alzolay or the fact that the Cubs are playing and they're in the midst of 16 games in a row, and their bullpen is totally worn out. This was more a product of, yes, we have to get Alzolay straightened out, but we've run out of pitchers here. That's where they were at yesterday. And, you know, the interesting process between a general manager and a manager is, a manager, no matter how much they're on the same page, has only 26 men to deal with. And it's incumbent upon him, regardless of whether there's a doghouse or there isn't a doghouse, to utilize all 26 guys. If a player isn't getting the job done, he has to use that player at certain times because you can't afford to wear out your bullpen, hurt guys. And at the same time, he has to send a message to the front office saying, look, these are the 26 guys I have. I have to use them at certain points. If it means that we have to lose a game at a certain point to save an arm and to try to get him back, it's not a great situation, but that's where we're at. There are no options for the minor leagues left for Adbert Alzolay. That's an important thing to look
he
at.
He can't
right
go down.
Now.
He can't go to Iowa. This is stick with him with the Cubs or DFA him or come up with a phantom injury the way they did with Kyle Hendricks, Bruce. Couldn't they do something like that to give him a respite or break? He has to hit reset. Sliders aren't getting over. He's not locating. He has no confidence or command any longer. And let's just look at the numbers. The past six outings, Bruce, Alzolay has surrendered 9 runs, 9 hits, more walks than strikeouts, 3-2, 3 home runs in that stretch, and overall, 5 home runs in 13 innings after giving up only 5-64 last year. That, to me, spells crisis.
The only thing hurt about Alzolay is his feelings, okay, at this point, right? I mean, he is a stand-up guy. He's doing the very best he can. The ball is leaking over the plate, whether it's the slider or the fastball, the two-seamer. They're all leaking over the plate. They're all getting hit. He didn't get clobbered yesterday, David, okay? There were balls hit up the middle. There was almost a broken bat ball that fell in. The demoralizing part was more the professional end of the game not looking good. You had a base hit, a stolen base. You had a base hit, you had a stolen base. You had a base hit, you had a stolen base. Okay?
It was death by a thousand cuts. It was very painful. Yes.
It was not a professional loss to the game, okay? It looked amateurish, and it just is not the type of ball that the Cubs have played all year. It was difficult to look at. So on a lot of different levels, the Cubs are struggling to get their hitters back. This is also, and keep this in mind, David, this is a product of the Cubs not scoring runs by being in this position. They are not scoring runs. They are depending on guys who are good players to be middle-of-the-order hitters while Suzuki and Bellinger are trying to get back. That's not sustainable.
Okay.
And again, you're playing all these one-run games. The Mets series could have gone either way in any of those games. An error here, a mental mistake there for the Mets on one part. Those games were winnable and losable. I think the Cubs have done a really good job of staying afloat. But, it's starting to show some leaks because of the fact that the bullpen is worn out. 16 games, 16 days, and you have an offense that is just it's not going to produce the way that you thought it would.
Okay, well, let's prioritize then. Let's summarize and prioritize, Bruce. We have the bullpen issue, which is essentially it's a bullpen issue, but it's focused on one guy, Albert Alzolay, who's been the most disappointing member. You've got an offensive issue, which is basically the Cubs have stopped hitting for power. They've got 10 straight games now where they hit either one or no home runs. 3 home runs over the last 5 games, all by Christopher Morel. Thank you, Chris Kamka. You've got offensive issues compounded by bullpen issues. You can't win close games because your bullpen can't hold a lead and you can't get enough offense to muster a big lead. So we'll ask our audience, 312-644-6767. Which Cubs problem concerns you more? Which one's going to get in the way of winning the division? Because they still are in a good position. You're right, Bruce. They've dealt with all kinds of injuries. We'll get into what the starting rotation looks like in a little bit, but they're still sitting there at 19-14 in the division in a very good spot considering all the injuries they've endured. I wonder what people think about that. Let us know. We're also going to talk to Pete Crow Armstrong at 9:30. We're hoping for a White Sox guest in the second hour. We'll talk Sox if you wish, but I think the focus is in town, the Cubs-Brewers rivalry, Craig Counsell versus Pat Murphy, who returns today. Murph missed yesterday. He was suspended. The Brewers won anyway. Bruce, but as we get to the callers and the texters, before we get to that point and ask them, what do you think? Is the offense that is missing a bigger issue, or is the bullpen a bigger problem? Because I think it's the bullpen, because the offense is going to come back when Bellinger and Suzuki return. I don't know what the plan is in the back end of that bullpen.
Well, the plan for the bullpen would be kind of obvious, and that would be guys who are in the rotation right now are going to be moved back into the bullpen. Okay, now finding and determining roles. We're very used to over the last 5 weeks hearing Craig Counsell as the manager of the Cubs for the first time talking about 27 outs. But I push back by saying roles are important. Roles are important to establish. Not just outs. And when you bring back Justin Steele on Monday, which one of your starting pitchers goes to the bullpen? More importantly, David, what is that pitcher's role? Okay, so let's just take one at a time.
Okay.
Steele comes back on Monday. Okay. Who goes out of the rotation for the Cubs?
Well, you're pushing back Shota Imanaga one day, correct? Isn't he going to be getting an extra day because of Steele's return?
Yeah, that's smart.
That's smart.
Been the plan all along.
All right, well, let's go here then, Blair. Yeah. Bruce, I almost called you my son's name. I'm sorry about that, Blair.
That's okay.
He's still listening, I'm sure.
It's quite a compliment.
It is quite a compliment, Bruce. I hold you in high esteem. So let's look at the Cubs' rotation. Steele comes back, and you've got Shota, who is the best pitcher in baseball. Jameson Taillon, who goes today, is off to a lights-out start. You've got three guys there that you trust. Javier Assad, oh, by the way, in the last calendar year, has the lowest ERA of any starting pitcher in the game. He goes tomorrow. There's four. Who's your fifth?
Who's your fifth starter?
Yeah.
Well, it can be as Kyle Hendricks as early as next week.
Thank you. You walked right into that one. I think you're right, because Kyle Hendricks at AA Tennessee, when he wasn't getting hit by a line drive back to the mound, he was pitching five pretty good innings. I know it was AA, but it was still a sign of encouragement. So let's say, for the sake of argument, Bruce, Kyle Hendricks comes back next week and rejoins the rotation. Hendricks, Assad, Steele, Shota, Jameson Taillon, there's five. What do you do with Jordan Wicks? What do you do with Hayden Wesneski? What's up with Ben Brown? These bulk guys in the bullpen, does this solve your Alzolay issue? I don't know.
Are you confident that a Wesneski or a Brown can get the last three outs?
Yes.
I think that's the question.
Yes. Right. Look, here's why I say yes emphatically and without even hesitation. We've been hearing from Craig Counsell, who is changing the way we talk about pitching, right? He's evolving. Our language and descriptors are evolving because Craig Counsell's here. Outgetters. They're not closers. They're not setup men. Why are the last three outs that much different? I know Ryan Dempster was on the program this week talking about that. It is different. And I think any baseball fan understands why we believe that. But if the Cubs are going to tell us that isn't necessarily the case, we've got to take them at their word. So why should it be any harder for Ben Brown or Hayden Wesneski to enter in the ninth inning to get three outs any harder than it is in a high-leverage situation in the sixth?
It's a mentality. It's one that has to be developed. It's one of confidence, whether you're pitching three middle innings or at the end. Brown's confidence is very high. Wesneski's is at an all-time high right now after going 6 1/3 innings yesterday, a shutout baseball. Both of their stuff play, okay? That's important, okay? Both of them throw a 97-mile-an-hour fastball, have breaking balls they're getting over for strikes. But, David, when does that slider all of a sudden spike into the dirt with somebody on base?
That's a good question.
Rather than going to the catcher's glove?
You're right.
I mean, that is a difference. You know, that's one of the subtle differences in being the guy on the mound to get the last three outs. Also, the last three outs are difficult because the opposing manager is going to unload every bullet that he has on his bench, match it up the best that he can, and put the pressure on you to get those out, whether you have a one-run lead or a two-run lead, rarely a three-run lead for a save. But they are different because it's a mentality that has to be developed by the pitcher, or the pitcher has to have, and that is going out there believing he's getting those outs. Because once you fail, you've not just failed in your role like you are in the sixth or seventh inning.
Right.
You fail the team, and you're walking into that clubhouse, and everybody's looking around going, yeah, you're fine. You know, we love you. But the fact is, everyone's looking at you like you lost the game for them.
Well, I get it. It's more of a pass-fail equation. You check a box, yes or no. Did you succeed? Closers, it's more black and white. There's a lot more gray area with other relievers. 773, and this is all related to the big picture discussion about Cubs pitching. 773 texter, why on earth would you want Kyle Hendricks in the rotation again? Bruce, I think that's going to be a question the first time he takes the mound and maybe even gets lit up. But I wonder, I don't wonder. I kind of know, don't you think? The Cubs are going to give him another opportunity to succeed or fail. They're going to put him back in the rotation right as soon as he's back on the active list.
The difference is it's a short leash, okay?
Okay.
Because they do have options. When healthy, the Cubs have options. They, you know, notice one thing. They have really good arms, okay? These are really good pitchers that they have in the bullpen. If you're talking about Brown and Wisniewski as choices of either a starter or a bullpen guy, that's a great problem to have in an organization. And the Cubs are starting to have that. Hopefully by June, they have another problem. His name is Cade Horton. You have to decide bullpen guy to start or starter. Okay, that's another big problem to have. That's a really nice problem to have for the Cubs moving along.
I saw that news headline cross the wire this week. Bruce, Cade Horton promoted to AAA Iowa, and I imagined you smiling devilishly, knowing that this was going to happen, calling for him to be in Chicago by July, and you kind of have been, you've been on him all along. And Carter Hawkins didn't necessarily shoot it down when he was on the Mully and Haw show earlier this week. This is a kid who dominated Double A, and now he's at his next level, and if he dominates AAA similarly, it will be sooner rather than later, and he can help in the bullpen. Likely, that's where he would start, correct?
Well, you know, if you believe in the way of Craig Counsell bringing young players like Woodruff and Burns through the bullpen, you have to believe that this is also the way that he'd like to bring Horton along. Now, Horton being the jewel of the organization and the golden arm, you might get some conversation and pushback from the front office saying, look, mm-hmm. he's been a starter. Let's keep him a starter and let's go that way. But, you know, Counsell is on record saying the best way for young players to get experience and to come through to be ready to pitch in the big leagues as a starter is through the bullpen.
I think that's good to hear from the manager. It's also good to hear from the general manager, and this is what Carter Hawkins had to say about Cade Horton on the Mully and Haw show.
A promotion standpoint, especially with guys that, you know, are quote-unquote our priority players, you know, the question about whether to promote someone is not typically having to do with our need at the big leagues. It's what's the best environment for this player to continue to improve. And we felt like that was AAA for Cade at this point. We felt like the competition level was going to be a little bit better for him there to continue to help him develop and execute the way that we know he'll need to be able to do to be able to be dominant in the big leagues, which is the ultimate goal. So, yeah, I mean, of course, if he continues to dominate in AAA and it's really clear that he can only improve more by going to the big leagues, you know, we would consider pulling that trigger. But right now our focus is on execution, his stuff, his delivery. If he does that, I think a lagging indicator is going to be a chance for him to help out in the big leagues. But that's definitely in the future for right now for us, and the focus is just on today with him and AAA.
Scored listener line is powered by BetQL. Smarter bets start with BetQL. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Let's start the conversation with Joe from St. Charles. Joe, welcome inside the clubhouse.
Hi, guys. Good to talk to you. You know, I think they got plenty of pitching without Hendricks. Second, you got to score more than a run or two to win any games. Okay, and three, how about looking over at first base when you got a runner there so the guys don't have a running head start to second and at least give the catcher a chance to throw a guy out, right?
Right. That's a good phone call. Bruce, what did you make of that yesterday when the Brewers seemed to be taking advantage of that and it worked to their advantage?
Well, the only word I can think of is embarrassing. And I say that because, and Amaya does a really good job as a catcher. Alzale is working his butt off to get better. But in those circumstances, you have to, I mean, a couple of those guys were base stealers, okay?
Right.
Not all of them. Not every one of them, okay? That was embarrassing. They stole bases easily. Alzale, and again, I think anybody who watches a lot of baseball like you and I and our listeners, one look over and then throwing the ball doesn't get it done, okay? They read that, And as the caller said, how about throwing over once or twice, okay? How about a back pick from a catcher once in a blue moon, okay? These are things that keep that extra step away and plant some doubt in the mind of the base runner. There were no doubts in the mind of the base runners of what they were doing there. And keep in mind, Ricky Weeks was managing this team, the bench coach, yesterday. The Brewers did not miss a thing by not having their manager there yesterday. They played a good, solid game, and fundamentally with the stealing the bases, scoring runs, you know, it was an embarrassing end to what was a really good game and a well-pitched game by Wisniewski.
Three stolen bases off of Alzolay and Amaya made a big difference for the Brewers, absolutely. So let's close out the segment with another call from Jim is in Frankfurt. Jim, welcome inside the clubhouse.
Hey, guys. I have a really – this is something I don't think anybody has ever talked about, but have you guys noticed that the average starters are now – I mean, they're getting praised for going 5-6 innings. I think that's morphing into a big problem. I think that's what's going on with the Cubs bullpen, too.
Jim, thanks for the phone call. I think people are talking about that, Bruce. I think it's a trend in baseball. You look at it all over. That said, Hayden Wisniewski, 6 1/3. You can't complain about his length yesterday. That was something I think we didn't expect, even though I know what he's referring to. Four innings is considered solid. You want five and dive, and then, you know, this is the way that baseball is being handled these days.
There's so many more foul balls, so much more, contact and deeper counts in baseball now, that six innings is the equivalent of eight just 7 or 8 years ago, David, maybe 10 years ago. That six innings is ideal. I don't think a manager, unless the guy is a true ace, I don't think he'd ever expect more than six innings from any of his pitchers these days. That's why we have eight men in the bullpen every day starting a game.
We love our texters. 309, Kyle Hendricks as a closer. Even in the starts, he's been roughed up. He was lights out for the first inning every time. Trouble never started until inning two. He has the mental capacity as well.
Doug Jones.
Bruce, you're not serious. I know Doug Jones.
No, I'm just saying there have been soft tossers who have been, you know, but most of them have a trick pitch. The softer tossers of the world.
Yeah.
You know, the guys who relied on split finger pitches, the guys that we relied on changeups like Doug Jones, who was very successful closer, had 30 plus saves a whole bunch of years. It's a rarity that a closer doesn't have, you know, a 95 to 100 mile an hour fastball.
Big ask. I don't think it's going to happen. Quickly, Bruce, before we break, I want to ask you this question. When's the last time you could think of a Cub relief pitcher, maybe even closer, fall off the map as quickly or have a descent as sudden as it seems Adbert Alzolay is experiencing from last year's second half to this year's first?
Yeah, I can't right off the top. I can't really think of one that quickly, you know, that. But again, it was, you know, without hitting Adbert, it was a sample size. And once he came back from injury, it was the last day of the season. He really never came fully back. So, you know, his arms feel strong, but bottom line is he hasn't gotten a feel for his pitches again since that time in September when he hurt himself.
Cubs are struggling, and yet they're still 19-14 after losing to the Brewers on Friday and splitting the series with the Mets and losing 2-3 in Boston. Jameson Taillon today, starting pitcher, against Tobias Myers. That you can listen to that game right here on The Score, pregame coverage at 12:45 with Pat Hughes. Great to hear Pat back on Friday with Coombe and Zach on the call for the first pitch at 1:20. Listen to every Cub game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. Pete Crow Armstrong, he's been in the middle of a lot of big plays, and he's had quite a week, and he'll join us next on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
1-1 drill toward right center, hard hit ball. Going back is Armstrong making a running catch. Pete Pro Armstrong gets a very quick jump on the ball. The diminutive, fleet-footed, left-handed center fielder took off angling toward the right center field warning track and made the running catch very gracefully.
Welcome back. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. David Haw, Bruce Levine. And thank you to Pat Hughes and 670 The Score for that highlight. That was fleet-footed Pete Crow Armstrong in center field, tracking it down the way he does so effortlessly at times. And he joins us now on the Circus Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circus Sports app today. Good morning, Pete. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing well. Thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it. You got a day game today. I know it's a little bit early for you, but you've had quite a week. You've had an eventful week. You've been in the middle of a lot of big plays and big moments since you were called up. Just how would you describe your second stint back with the Cubs? We talked to you in spring training. You were confident you could make an impact, and certainly you have.
I think that this time around, I'm coming in with some more experience, and these relationships that I got are continuing to get stronger, and I think that's important as I kind of find my way. But I've just been getting put in really good positions to succeed by this coaching staff and by my teammates and the trust they've put in me. And, I'm here to play defense and go save some runs. And, if I can find ways to contribute with the bat too, and then that means we're trending in the right direction.
The mental side of the game is rarely talked about a lot, but I try to talk a lot to yourself and your teammates and other players and managers and coaches about it, because it's hard to define for fans what that is, but it seems to be, in this day and age, the most important tool for a player. Where do you find the serenity? Where do you find the peace of mind? Where do you find the confidence when you need it? And obviously, it's showing right now.
Yeah, that's a good question. I appreciate that. I think, the peace and the serenity and kind of the freedom you feel, on a big league field, for me at least, I found that through trying to look through the eyes of my teammates and the people around me and just remembering that at the end of the day that this is baseball, and this is the same game that I played when I was 3 years old, and it's the same game that I'm hoping to be playing at 40. So like the confidence should come from knowing that I've done this for a long time and knowing that I have, a lot of guys who have done it longer than me around me who are more than willing to kind of help me out and be there for me if I need. Jan Gomes just walked by and he's a good example of that. People help build confidence externally just as some have the ease doing it themselves, the peace comes from being on a baseball field at 2 o'clock on a Friday at Wrigley Field, and then the confidence comes from the work that we've put in and the people that have kind of built up that confidence around me.
And the results have been there since you came up the second time, Pete. Offensively, you've come through with some clutch hits, some big moments, a big RBI home run and a sacrifice fly that have made an impact. And you were in the middle of a big play the other night. at Citi Field in New York, where you covered a lot of ground, and then you were there and you leapt, and the ball did not, you did not come down with the ball. It bounced off your glove. Carter Hawkins was on the Mully and Haw show the other day, and he said he'd tell you that 9 out of 10 times he catches that ball. Oh, he'd tell you 10 out of 10 times he catches that ball. Take us through that play, and do you think that you should have caught that ball?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with Carter. You know, that ball should have been caught for sure. I don't know. I think you can possibly tell that I'm still a little shook up about it. But, you know, those are the plays that I'm here to make, and not making that, you know, that was tough to swallow for sure. But very quickly after, I was picked up by my left fielder and my third baseman and my catcher. So, you know, that's kind of the beauty of this stuff is, in sports in general, is the way that the tides can kind of shift real quick. You know, I think that play, though, you know, specifically, that was a very important moment for me personally. I think just having to move on to the next play, mm-hmm. And become present again. You know, but again, I agree with Carter there. I think I would have to say I catch that 9, 10, 11 times out of 10. So, yeah, that's what I'm here to do. So, I'll have to be putting the ball in my glove more than I have been. But you know, the positioning was really good on that play. We were all on the same page in the outfield, and I've talked about getting set up for success by people around me. Like, that's kind of what happened there. And I didn't quite execute, but, you know, Naris ended up making a good pitch and gave Happer a chance and Nick a chance to make a play and save me there and save us there. And, you know, I've never gone through such a long replay process, but that was stressful for sure.
Maximizing your skill set, and we're going to probably those fortunate enough like myself and David, everyone else who watches Cub baseball, are going to have a chance to watch you hopefully over the next 10 years, maybe more, show what a player with your skills can do on the field. And when I look at you, I look at a guy who used to play for the Atlanta Braves and the Giants. His name is Brett Butler, who was a great center fielder, used speed, but also used the ability of the bunt and the possibility of a bunt to create different holes and different opportunities for himself to get base hits. I wonder if you, when you project yourself and you look at you as a offensive threat, if you think that might be a part of your game moving forward.
Absolutely, it has to be. I think in the bunt attempts that I've had in the minor leagues and. You know, in conversation with Willie and even the hitting coaches and counts especially, we've all, you know, they've all kind of got me to an understanding of the just kind of like the necessity that the bunting is, or that the bunt game is, just because it does showing it, it, you know, like defenses have to play to that, and being somebody that can run, it is equally important to be able to put the ball on the ground and in the right spot. You know, bunting for hits is you could consider those day saving opportunities. You could consider those run scoring opportunities. But I've definitely looked at it in a way that it kind of opens up the field. So that's always got to be in the forefront of my mind going into at bats is how can I create, if I'm not going to put the ball in the air or, you know, let it fall in front of somebody, you know, I think, the bunting game or the bunting side of things is just going to continue to make defenses have to, you know, adapt. And honestly, it's about looking at it 2 or 3 batters later. It's who I open up the field for. It's who I put runners on base for. And so that's something I got to really get better at is laying them down kind of like it's second nature.
couple more minutes with Pete Crow Armstrong. Pete, I really appreciate the way you answered questions directly. So I'll ask you about two things that happened this week, and you can give me a quick summation of each one. Number one, you talk about bunting. You bunted in the sixth against Severino to break up a no-hitter. You're trying to get on base. It was a 1-0 game. You got booed for it. I wonder what your reaction was to that and your thought process. And secondly, when you were using your helmet as a prop to stay on second base, the rules say you probably should have been called out, but have you ever done that before, and what did the ump say to you then?
That first one, you know, looking back at that, like, I probably – I think you could look at it two ways. I probably could have read the room a little bit better and, you know, realized that, it was the sixth inning of a no-hit bid, but – at the same time, it's a 0-0 game, and or maybe 1-0. I think it was 0-0. You know, neither team was really putting the ball. It was 1-0 them, I think, right? Because Nimmo hit the home run.
Right.
That's 1-0 baseball. We're trying to win the game. I think that. That's just me trying to make a play. You know, Severino's was clearly feeling it that night, and it was a very fast-paced game. And I think it was less about trying to break up a no-hitter, and it was more about trying to get on base, in all honesty. You know, I think if it's the eighth, ninth inning and we're down by three, then that's a much different, you know, outcome. Yep. I don't think I'm thinking about laying one down, but – but the way that they had kind of left first base open for me, and the way that I felt like Severino was falling down the mound, I felt like that was just a good baseball play to be made, and clearly I didn't do a good enough job. I didn't get it down. So, you know, the booze is the booze. People should feel however they want about that. You know, that's why we have baseball fans. But that's what I got for that, and the you know the helmet thing's funny. I can't say that I was planning on doing that. My helmet does tend to fall off a lot. And if you look back at video, I even back in the minor leagues, or mostly in the minor leagues, I will make an attempt to grab the helmet, whether it's already falling off and it's behind my back, or if it's just kind of coming off my head, I'll always take it off. But I didn't plan on sliding past the back there. And I did, and I guess my body just reacted. So, I think that the middle infield for the Mets was right by begging the umpire to take a look, or the dugout to take a look, or whoever. But that was instinctual, and it's probably something I'm gonna have to be a little more aware of next time I go to grab my helmet falling off my head. But it was smart by McNeil and Wendell for making a case for why they should take a look. I hadn't spoken to the umpire after that, though. I think that was a different play, and I think I might have confused just about everybody. I didn't even quite know that I did it at the time, I guess. But that's one that that I'm glad I got away with for sure.
We appreciate your candor. We wish you the best of luck, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you here on The Score.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks, guys.
Pete Crow Armstrong, Cubs center fielder, in the middle of a lot of conversation, a lot of big plays over the last week or so. Bruce, we'll continue to talk Cubs. We'll continue to talk PCA, and we'll continue to get your phone calls and opinions. 312-644-6767. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Welcome back. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Bruce Levine, David Haugh here until 11 o'clock talking baseball. Pete Crow Armstrong just joined us, Bruce. We'll get to a Major League Baseball trade in a moment, but wanted to ask you, he's such an engaging young man. He's such a confident player, and he's an asset, and he's been good offensively. We know what he can do with the glove, notwithstanding the play we talked to him about. What happens when Cody Bellinger and Seiya Suzuki come back? Is PCA clearly going down? Is this somebody that could stay up here and play a role? Would you rather have him or Alex Canario, for instance, on your roster as a backup outfielder. What do you think happens, Bruce?
Well, he has to play somewhere, doesn't he? I don't think he's a bench player. The way that Council uses players, and now that there's a DH in the National League the last 2 years, there's options, okay? So as much as you know that Ian Happ is a Gold Glove left fielder, you might have to rethink the outfield configuration and at times use the DH as a rest spot and have Armstrong out there defensively covering more ground for you. In other words, Bellinger gets days as DH. Suzuki gets days as DH. Happ gets days as DH. These are essential things to have one of the premier defensive players in baseball out there every day in Pete Crow Armstrong. Okay, so whether he's playing center or whether Bellinger is moving to left or whether one of those other guys is DHing, Pete Crow Armstrong has to play defense just about every day if I'm the manager of the Chicago Cubs. I'm going to have to find a way to have that type of range out there for me on a daily basis.
Bruce, it might not be that hard, really, if when Bellinger comes back, and I know Mike Tauchman has been invaluable. He's got to have a role. But when Bellinger comes back, he could DH, so you don't risk him having injury. You could have him DH and still keep PCA and keep Michael Bush at first base, and maybe even you would consider all kinds of alternatives. It depends on how well PCA is hitting at the time.
Well, what's your best defensive team? And I think that is something that Council is going to consider. Your best defensive team is Pete Crow Armstrong in center.
Mm-hmm.
Your best defensive team is Bellinger at first base, right? Okay,
mm-hmm.
That's your best defensive team. Can it be aligned at the end of a game? So in the 2-1, 3-2, 4-3 games, you have your best defenders out there without losing the DH. Those are things that you're going to have to discuss. Again, I have to have great defense out there. The Cubs are going to continue to play close games all year long. They have really good pitching. They'll get their bullpen straightened out. But to me, they have not been a really good defensive team this year as of yet. And I think they need to get better.
So to finish off the thought on the trade, big major league deal, the Padres coming to town on Monday for a 3-game series against the Cubs, and they will have a new second baseman. They have made a trade to get Luis Arraez, who is a dynamite hitter. And with the Marlins, they give up 3 prospects, and they're also receiving cash in a deal to offset Arraez's $10.1 million salary, according to Bob Nightingale. Bruce, what's your quick reaction to that deal?
Well, that Miami has a real good chance to beat out the White Sox for the worst record in baseball this year, because they've traded one of their only legitimate offensive players away for the future, and I don't necessarily blame them. I hate the whole Miami operation. Nothing personal against the owners. I think ownership in Miami has done a horrible job since its inception 31 years ago, and it continues to be a horribly run organization. But the reality is that Arraez is going to help the Padres. If you notice, all the teams in the National League are bunched up. The Cubs have the fifth best record in the National League. Almost everybody else in the National League after that is around a 500 team outside of Colorado and Miami. So I think San Diego has just really improved themselves.
Absolutely. 2-time batting champion, 2-time All-Star. This is a guy that falls out of bed hitting, and he's going to do the same for the Padres, who arrive at Wrigley Field Monday for a 3-game series. Okay, we are going to shift gears a little bit. We're going to talk White Sox when we come back. Yes, the White Sox shut out again, a record They're on a record pace. They shut out for the ninth time in St. Louis. This is a team that is struggling to score runs. They're struggling to catch balls. They're struggling, period. And it's a ninth straight road loss, 1-14 away from 35th and Shields. And I don't know what to say about the White Sox, Bruce, but we're going to find ways to talk about them next. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center... Keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Give me the score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Welcome back. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Bruce Levine, David Haw here until 11 o'clock talking baseball. Pete Crow Armstrong just joined us, Bruce. We'll get to a Major League Baseball trade in a moment, but wanted to ask you, he's such an engaging young man. He's such a confident player, and he's an asset, and he's been good offensively. We know what he can do with the glove, notwithstanding the play we talked to him about. What happens when Cody Bellinger and Seiya Suzuki come back? Is PCA clearly going down? Is this somebody that could stay up here and play a role? Would you rather have him or Alex Canario, for instance, on your roster as a backup outfielder? What do you think happens, Bruce?
Well, he has to play somewhere, doesn't he? I don't think he's a bench player. The way that Council uses players... And now that there's a DH in the National League the last 2 years, there's options, okay? So as much as you know that Ian Happ is a gold glove left fielder, you might have to rethink the outfield configuration and at times use the DH as a rest spot and have Armstrong out there defensively covering more ground for you. In other words, Bellinger gets days as DH. Suzuki gets days as DH. Happ gets days as DH. These are essential things to have one of the premier defensive players in baseball out there every day in Pete Crow Armstrong. Okay, so whether he's playing center or whether... Bellinger is moving to left, or whether one of those other guys is DHing. Pete Crow Armstrong has to play defense just about every day if I'm the manager of the Chicago Cubs. I'm going to have to find a way to have that type of range out there for me on a daily basis.
Bruce, it might not be that hard, really, if when Bellinger comes back, and I know Mike Tauchman has been invaluable, he's got to have a role. But when Bellinger comes back, he could DH, so you don't risk him having injury. You could have him DH and still keep PCA and keep Michael Busch at first base, and maybe even you would consider all kinds of alternatives. It depends on how well PCA is hitting at the time.
Well, what's your best defensive team? And I think that is something that Council is going to consider. Your best defensive team is Pete Crow Armstrong in center.
Mm-hmm.
Your best defensive team is Bellinger at first base, right? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's your best defensive team. Can it be aligned at the end of a game? So in the 2-1, 3-2, 4-3 games, you have your best defenders out there without losing the DH. Those are things that you're going to have to discuss. Again, I have to have great defense out there. The Cubs are going to continue to play close games all year long. They have really good pitching. They'll get their bullpen straightened out. But to me, they have not been a really good defensive team this year as of yet, and I think they need to get better.
So to finish off the thought on the trade, big major league deal, the Padres coming to town on Monday for a three-game series against the Cubs, and they will have a new second baseman. They have made a trade to get Luis Arraez, who is a dynamite hitter, and with the Marlins, they give up three prospects, and they're also receiving cash in a deal to offset Arraez's $10.1 million salary, according to Bob Nightingale. Bruce, what's your quick reaction to that deal?
Well, that Miami has a real good chance to beat out the White Sox for the worst record in baseball this year, because they've traded one of their only legitimate offensive players away for the future, and I don't necessarily blame them. I hate the whole Miami operation. Nothing personal against the owners. I think ownership in Miami has done a horrible job since its inception 31 years ago, and it continues to be a horribly run organization. But the reality is that Arraez is going to help the Padres. If you notice, all the teams in the National League are bunched up. The Cubs have the fifth best record in the National League. Almost everybody else in the National League after that is around a 500 team outside of Colorado and Miami. So I think San Diego has just really improved themselves.
Absolutely. Two-time batting champion, two-time All-Star. This is a guy that falls out of bed hitting, and he's going to do the same for the Padres, who arrive at Wrigley Field Monday for a three-game series. Okay, we are going to shift gears a little bit. We're going to talk White Sox when we come back. Yes. The White Sox shut out again, a record. They're on a record pace. They shut out for the ninth time in St. Louis. This is a team that is struggling to score runs. They're struggling to catch balls. They're struggling, period. And it's a ninth straight road loss, 1-14 away from 35th and Shields. And I don't know what to say about the White Sox, Bruce, but we're going to find ways to talk about them next. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at MyBob's.com to play now.